Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
6:45 on a rainy Thursday evening in Lansing. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Andre Holgate. For feedback, our email address is ccrecap@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Love to hear from you. Well, cults, they're nothing new in America, but the recent death of a man who was involved in a yoga cult in Arizona is now drawing attention to these intense and reclusive groups. My next guest knows all about it. Marsha Lowe is the author of the new book, The Orange Robe, My 18 Years as a Yogic Nun. Marsha, thank you very much for joining us on WILS this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Now, this yoga retreat or yoga cult in Arizona, apparently one of the members got into some kind of a scuffle, then he was ordered to leave and died in the desert. But part of what they're doing out there is they're trying to meditate, and they don't talk at all for about 3 years is the plan. Did you have a similar experience?
Not really, not like that. We did brief periods of silence during the day, but never had any like long-term silence or staying away from society in general like that.
So
that sounds really extreme.
It is. Yeah. It is extreme indeed. So tell me, what was the typical day like in a yoga cult, in a yoga retreat? Were you just spending most of the day just sitting in meditation?
Well, when I went for training, the group I was with was named called Ananda Marga. It's an Indian-based group. And I went to train to be a yoga teacher or a yogic nun, which is, I looked like a nun except I was dressed all in orange. And we spent about 6 months training. And once we did that, we got posted to different places. We would reach out to people and teach them yoga and meditation and also do social service. So our days were quite busy, but we did meditate 4 times a day. As teachers, we were required to meditate 4 times a day and do yoga postures twice a day.
And as a yoga nun, were you basically not having relationships of any kind then?
Well, we were celibate, and we didn't really develop very close relationships even with people in our group, because we would get changed, our postings would get changed from time to time. So you might develop a friendship, but then, you know, you would get posted elsewhere, and then that friendship, for the most part, couldn't continue because you would rarely see the person.
I see. Now, what drew you to this pursuit, and how did you get involved with this particular, yoga group?
Well, I was in the 70s, early 70s. I was a college senior at the University of Pennsylvania, and I was very much interested in Eastern religion and Zen. And it was kind of like the times, the Beatles, you know, with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. I was very much a Beatles fan or freak, as we called it in those days. And so I was very interested. And I saw in the newspaper, in the college newspaper, that an Ananda Marga yogi was coming to give a talk and to teach meditation. So I quickly ran to the place to learn meditation. And that's how I first came across it. And I was didn't really know what I wanted to do after I got out of college. And so very, very often young people who are kind of at a state of transition, they're not sure what they want to do after graduating from college, often can be kind of attracted to a kind of charismatic person or charismatic kind of ideology.
And so would you say you fell under his spell? And what triggered that, would you say?
Well, I didn't meet him for quite a while, because the time when I really started to go regularly to meditate at the centers, it wasn't immediately, but a year or two later, I learned that the guru, the teacher, was in jail. And so I didn't meet him for many years, but his books and the philosophy appealed to me. It was very kind of holistic, because it wasn't only self to develop yourself, but it also was a service to others. So that was very appealing to me. And so I was very much taken with it.
I see. So it wasn't necessarily any personality involved. It was the practice of meditating and the group itself.
We did very much revere the guru, even though we hadn't met him. He was considered, people in the organization, in the group, really considered him like God. And so everything he said or wrote, people wouldn't question, because it was like they felt that he was really like an incarnation of God. And so even though I hadn't met him, I still felt that kind of reverence, and everybody around me had that kind of reverence.
I'm talking to Marsha Lowe. She's the author of the new book, The Orange Robe, My 18 Years as a Yogic Nun. Marsha, if you could, give me a sense of how that can happen, because obviously as an American, you grew up in a culture, I don't know if you were raised religiously, but how is it that as a young adult, you fell into, you know, you say you view this individual as kind of a god. How does that occur? What is it that he's saying or doing that makes you feel that way towards him?
Well, part of it is like, I guess in meditation, you get certain experience, you have certain experiences of meditation, chanting, and you have very powerful spiritual experience. And also from reading his books, I felt convinced he was really an extraordinary personality. I mean, at the beginning, I didn't really regard him as God like I did later when I became much more involved. But from the start, I could tell that he had a lot to offer. And so it was also partly the times. A lot of people in the early 70s were very taken with yoga, Eastern religion. Again, the Beatles and everything mm-hmm. that was going on at that time, and I was one of those people. And I also felt like at the time that the identity I had, I felt very much was lacking. And so this was a chance for me to have a new identity. I would become a spiritual teacher and have a new name, mm-hmm. and it was very alluring to me.
When you're talking about having this spiritual experience through meditation, for those who don't meditate but know the general experience of altering your consciousness through substances, let's say, how would you compare what happens when you're in meditation, and how long does it take in the process to actually begin to have these kinds of deeper experiences you're describing?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of individual. Sometimes it can happen pretty quickly. If someone is very open and very quickly will have a very deep experience. Other times it can take, meditating is very difficult. But sometimes chanting helps. And I actually had an experience, I guess once I got really involved, about 2 or 3 months, I went to a retreat where we did a lot of chanting and meditation, and I just had a very powerful experience where I felt that I had found my path, and I felt that the guru was now my guru.
You're saying you're having these emotional experiences. Are you seeing things also, kind of hallucinations almost?
No, not quite like that, but just a very powerful inner feeling of bliss, of deep concentration and feeling of oneness. Those are some of the words that people use to mm-hmm. express those types of experiences.
Now, fair to say you're saying you never had any kind of experience like that before in your life?
Well, no, actually, well, I did. I went to college in the late 60s and early 70s, so you can guess what that means. I had experience with marijuana and LSD, and I had some very good experiences with those substances. But I guess I could say nothing as deep as really was in deep meditation, but a similar mm-hmm. taste of it.
Now, your book says that you spent 18 years as a yogic nun. Then did you at one point, you've walked away from that then?
Yes. The book shows how, talks about as gradually I became disillusioned that some of the things that were going on in the group were not to my liking. It was very hierarchical and also sexist attitudes. India in the 70s was a very patriarchal society, and that translated into the group as well. And also some of the things that people were involved with to raise money to me seemed to be, well, some of them were illegal, and to me some of them seemed immoral as well. So I just felt that I no longer wanted to represent this group, and I was tired. I was traveling constantly from, mm-hmm. When I came back, I was 42, so I was starting to feel that this is really for young people, and I can't keep up with
Do you think
traveling.
This is the case generally for these yoga groups, that there is a level of corruption and sexism in there?
I think they're all different. There are some are better than others, and there are some groups, in fact, Buddhist groups that can be rather sexist, and then there can be other groups that are much more balanced and don't treat the sexes differently. So they're really all very different, and that's the thing that people get involved. They need to look carefully and see whether those are in keeping with their values or not.
I see. Now, what have you walked away from then? I mean, are you still meditating every day then?
No, I still meditate occasionally. I'm more attracted to Buddhist meditation. It's much more based on compassion. And Ananda Marga, I felt, at least my experience, was that people were not compassionate towards themselves or other people in the group. And how can you be compassionate to others? It starts with yourself. So I do meditate, but it's more like a Buddhist meditation, and I couldn't say I do that every day.
And when it comes to meditating, are you talking about 10, 15 minutes in a day, or is it several hours even?
Yeah, to start with, you know, people can start with 10 or 15 minutes a day, maybe, you know, twice a day, just briefly. And then the longer you do it, you can get, you know, you're able to concentrate and can sit for longer. It's a mistake to try to just start off with 10 minutes. That's definitely a mistake. with a half an hour.
Sure. I don't think people could stand doing that. But these reports, though, that we hear of occasionally when people get entrenched in meditation in these retreats where they meditate for many, many hours at a time, and they begin to almost, I don't want to say they lose their sense of reality, but things start to shift a little bit. Family members notice they're acting differently. Is there some validity there? Is there something that does occur if you start meditating too much and for too long?
I think, yeah, if you become unbalanced in your approach and you start to, you know, I developed this where I felt like the inner world was really the most real world, and I started ignoring the outer world. At one point, I found myself in a situation where I almost got shot because I was ignoring people shouting at me to get out of I was actually in Cyprus, between Turkish and Greek Cyprus, kind of in the DMZ, and I sat down and meditated. I didn't realize that's where I was, and people started shouting at me, and I just ignored them because I thought, well, I'm not going to listen to them. I'm going to meditate. It was kind of like my inner world became much more real than the outer world. And I think in meditation, you need to realize that the inner and the outer are one. And so people sometimes get lost that way.
Well, I'm guessing you're not the only one that experienced that in the group. So in terms, you're saying when you began to shift away from this lifestyle, from being a nun, that you said it was gradual, but was there an actual point where you remember that you thought to yourself, this is not for me?
Yeah, there was a turning point where I was at a retreat, and I was feeling down, and I couldn't get myself up to do meditation and to go out and participate in the events. And I was with other nuns in this one room, and they left in the morning, and nobody asked me how I was doing, and they came back for noontime meditation and stepped over me like I was a log or something, and went out again, and the same thing happened in the evening. It was like I didn't exist for them. And at that point, I realized, you know, this is not right. I mean, this is enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like they were probably stuck in their inner world at that point, and it sounds like a very intense and interesting experience. You can learn a lot more about it by reading Marsha's book, The Orange Robe, My 18 Years as a Yogic Nun. Marsha Lowe. Marsha, thanks a lot for joining us on 1320 WILS this evening.
Thank you so much.
Excellent. Now, we're just going to roll right through it, Andre. We're going to keep going till we hit the end of the program. First of all, let me just say, if you missed any of the interviews, we talked to Steve Cook, president of the MEA. Check him out. That is on our website, 1320WILS, where all our interviews are posted. Steve Mitchell from Mitchell Research and Communications about his new poll on Obama and Romney and just how close this race is. And, well, Andre, by the way, my producer, Andre Holgate, now joins me. Have you ever meditated yourself? Have you ever tried this stuff?
No, I've never tried.
I have to admit, when I was younger, I tried sitting down. I was a bit interested in meditation. I'd heard about it. Sounds like a nice thing to do. Do you sit quietly?
I write poetry, actually. So whenever I find myself in those moments where people would probably meditate, I write.
That's, Now, that's something to consider, writing poetry.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to consider that. But it sounds like an intense experience that Marsha went through. Certainly not for everyone. But what is for everyone, Andre, is 1320 WILS and the Capital City Recap. And you can get more of it tomorrow at 6 p.m. because we will be back Please join us then. Otherwise, have a good evening. Good night.